In the summer of 1861, the Union Navy faced a little bit of a problem. Although they had the bulk of the pre-war US Navy, and they were rapidly turning various commercial ships into auxiliary warships to help blockade the Confederate ports, word had reached them of Confederate efforts to build an ironclad warship with which to break the blockade. This led to an advert calling for designs for an ironclad warship from the general public, essentially crowdsourcing a solution. The primary stipulations were that the vessel needed a shallow draft in order to operate on the US Eastern Seaboard, and it should be capable of movement under both sail and steam, since contemporary steam engines were nowhere near efficient enough to allow for prolonged blockade duty on their own. Three designs were selected to progress. One was the USS Galena, which turned out to be far too vulnerable. Another was USS Monitor, which would be the one that actually fought the Confederate ironclad CSS Virginia, although it would also prove to be distressingly unseaworthy in rough weather. And the last was a much larger vessel. This would become USS New Ironsides. At the time, there were two large ocean-going ironclads either in service or about to enter service, the French Gloire and the British Warrior. Of these, the new American ship took much more after Gloire, being a wooden-hulled vessel with iron armour plating. She would be about 25 foot shorter than Gloire, but with a similar beam and almost half the draft. This significant compromise to allow for shallow water work limited the volume that was available for her power plant and would affect her overall underwater profile, making her significantly slower than the European vessels, but such is the nature of compromise. 1800 indicated horsepower drove a single screw for a top speed of 7 knots, although at first 9.5 had been hoped for, and there were a pair of masts to carry her to her destination, assuming the winds were favourable. Her proposed armament consisted of a gun deck carrying 16 single 9-inch Dahlgren guns, and the armour was to consist of two sections. A full-length belt, 4.5 inches thick above the waterline and 3 inches thick below, albeit this was a somewhat shallow affair that was designed to protect only the waterline, and then the immediate area around it. The main battery would have a 4.5-inch belt that sat above the waterline belt and extended for 170 feet, comprising the main gun deck. This would also be sloped back somewhat to try and partially deflect rounds coming in at a pretty much horizontal angle. However, design changes began to roll in thick and fast. The main battery was swapped out for 14 larger 11-inch Dahlgrens and a pair of 150-pound Parrott rifles, which also increased the crew numbers required. An additional mast was added for a total of 3. The Parrott rifles were then moved up to the spar deck and armoured shutters were added to the gun ports. And then someone realised a rather major design flaw. The ship was protected at the waterline and from the side, but if anybody got into a raking position at either end, there was nothing protecting the entire length of the gun deck except for some wooden planking. Quickly, a pair of bulkheads were added, made up of a foot of white oak with 2.5 inches of iron placed atop it. While this wasn't as substantial as some of the other big ironclads over in Europe, it would stop all but the very largest shot, and in any case, by this point additional weight was beginning to become a serious concern, which almost led to the cancelling of the bulkheads, although luckily for her crew, this cancellation was resisted by her designers. A final addition was a small armoured pilot house located just behind the funnel. By the time she completed, in summer 1862, all these changes had added almost 500 tons to her displacement, which was quite a lot considering she'd only been supposed to displace a little over 3,600 tons originally. Despite this 14% increase, which is equivalent to sticking a couple of large destroyers on the deck of a treaty-era battleship, she turned out to actually still make less than 15 foot of water in draft. Once commissioned, she was pretty much immediately sent south to blockade duty, which ended up doubling as her trial voyage, which showed that she tended to wander in random directions at anything much above 5.5 knots. Her gun carriages also weren't up to the task of actually safely dealing with the recoil of her 11-inch guns, but these issues would be partially resolved over time with a variety of hasty modifications to the rudder, the steering system, and the gun carriages themselves. Named USS New Ironsides in acknowledgement of USS Constitution, the old Ironsides, additional work was done before she rejoined the blockade in early 1863. reducing the height of the funnel and replacing the masts with simple pole masts that could carry flags but not any sails. The latter idea stuck, but the former affected boiler room draft and spewed funnel smoke everywhere over the spar deck, and so the funnel had to be returned to its original state. And at some point, a pair of 50-pounder Dahlgrens also happened to appear aboard. She would finally see action in April 1863 against the forts around Charleston, South Carolina. Although the small pilot house stuck behind the funnel was the cause of much complaint, her armour was the cause of much praise. She was hit more than 50 times in her opening engagement, and her belt armour stood up to the battering quite well, although the armoured gunport shutters were found to be prone to break or jam on impact. The deck plating also stood up to punishment reasonably well, and as the crew got more used to handling the ship, she was able to bring more and more fire to bear. The large number of guns and their relatively expansive working conditions compared to the monitors made the Confederates rate her as more of a menace than the collective flotilla of monitors that were scuttling about in her shadow. Only her draft, which was slightly greater than that of the monitors, made the latter a little more suited for close inshore work. She would subsequently see action against a large number of Confederate positions and would be shot at by almost every gun in the Confederate arsenal, plus an attack from a semi-submersible with a spar torpedo, but she survived all of this. But any chance of being the progenitor of a more ocean-oriented US fleet of ironclads in the post-American Civil War era was dashed at the end of 1866 when she somehow caught fire off Philadelphia. By the time the location of the fire was determined, choking smoke made it impossible to get a bucket brigade down there, and she burned to the waterline, with what was left of the wreck sold for scrap at the end of the decade.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.